I'm going to speak on mentoring. There's a great overlap between the two, but I think there's a difference in my understanding, and my understanding certainly is not beyond being corrected or enhanced, but to me, discipleship has more to do with a person's spiritual walk with God, his relationship with God. Certainly you do that in the setting of community, or it's not authentic. But mentoring has more to do with skills, ministry skills, as I see it, and helping people to be equipped to effectively serve the Lord in the context of his church. And so, you know, as I ask myself, why would Union University, which I think is an outstanding school, and I thank God for what has taken place on this campus since David Dockery came as president, and I salute him. And those of you in West Tennessee are certainly fortunate to be near this institution and to draw on the resources which are provided through this institution. The only reason I can think of that I'd be asked to share in this conference would be the fact that in 1996, our church, Lakeview Baptist Church in Auburn, Alabama, entered into a partnership with Southern Baptist Theological Seminary where we would train over a three-year period interns on our church staff. They would receive a classical theological education and graduate with a Master of Divinity degree after 3 years on our church staff. And so we've done that now for, this is our ninth year that we've done that. But I want to give you a little background how we came there. It never occurred to me when I was a student in seminary that I would be in a partnership with any seminary, much less Southern Seminary. I was a student at Southwestern Seminary from 1972 to 1975. And in those days, that was our most conservative seminary. So those of us who embrace the full authority and inspiration and veracity of the scriptures tended to gravitate toward Southwestern, though some of my evangelical friends went to other schools. It was just unthinkable when I was a student that I'd have any kind of relationship ever with Southern, but the ways of God are far beyond our ability to imagine or to believe, and so God has done this incredible work of theological renewal in Southern Baptist life, which has allowed Lakeview Baptist Church and Southern Baptist Theological Seminary to partner in training young men for pastoral ministry. Well, I want to begin this morning by just sharing a personal testimony. And then in the second session, I want us to look in the scriptures in both Old and New Testaments, but primarily in the New Testament, at some biblical basis for the whole idea of mentoring. And then in the last session, I want us to talk about the minister's lifestyle and ministry. I'm persuaded that many of our pastors and many of our churches are in trouble today. And we see this in the fact that so many of our churches are in decline or plateaued. And we see it in the fact that so many pastors have such short tenures in their pastorates. I don't know what the latest stats are, but at one time it was down to about 18 or 20 months or so, and I think it's maybe double that now. But there's this rapid turnover in churches as pastors go from church to church. And so instead of a pastor going somewhere and staying and having a 30 or a 40-year ministry in one place, they have about a 4-year ministry in 10 different churches. And I don't want to make light of that, because the Holy Spirit does move people around. But I'm persuaded that sometimes people move and the Holy Spirit doesn't have anything to do with it. And pastors oftentimes are forced out. And either they're asked to resign or they're told, you know, find another place before we ask you to resign. And it's all regrettable. And as I've thought about that, I've asked myself this question: why? Why does this take place like this? And for the most part, it's not some kind of theological deficiency. It's not that there are heretics out there. In fact, sadly, I'd have to confess that some churches would be happy to have someone who is theologically unorthodox. Because he has good people skills, and they're so theologically naive, they don't know the difference. So it's not that pastors are being fired because they're preaching bad doctrine. And it's not that pastors are being fired so much because of moral failures, though there's far too much of that. But as I survey Southern Baptist church life, I'm persuaded that the problem is that many of our pastors come out of seminary without adequate people skills, relationship skills, leadership skills, and equipping skills. And quite frankly, and this is certainly no slam on seminary life, but I'm not sure that seminary is structured today in such a way that these kind of skills can be learned in the classroom. John Bright, professor of Old Testament at Union Theological Seminary in Virginia, was lecturing in Fort Worth. At the conclusion of one of his lectures, he was asked this question: "Dr. Bright, what is the primary purpose of the seminary in today's culture?" And he responded by saying, "The primary purpose of seminary today is to unfit men and women for the ministry as commonly perceived by the churches." That's quite an indictment. Unfit. Now, when I was a student in seminary, I went with a very teachable heart because I had been a pastor. I finished in college in December of 1970, and for 20 months I served a rural church in South Alabama, and God blessed, and a lot of people were saved, primarily teenagers. It was on the crest of the Jesus Wave movement, and it was an incredible experience. But in those 20 months, I learned just how little I knew about being a pastor, and I knew how desperately I needed to learn. And so when I went to Southwestern, I went with an insatiable desire to learn, and tried to be the best student I could be. And God in His providence brought into my life these wonderful godly professors, and I learned so much in their classes. But there was one man in particular by the name of Cal Guy, who was a professor of missions, and I had been warned about Dr. Guy before I went to seminary. I was told you'll either love him or hate him. People aren't neutral about Cal Guy, and those of you who know him, you know that. But I found that he was a kindred spirit. And not only does this man have a passion to take the gospel to the nations, but Cal Guy is a man who knows about how to relate to your wife and your kids and people in general. And he is a man full of wisdom. And so, he and I have never had a formal mentoring relationship, but I adopted him as my mentor when I was a student, and he has been and continues to be to this very day a dear, dear friend to me and to my wife Kim and to our family, and he's been a mentor to our church across the years, now at 87, still going strong. And he and I were able to share a pastor's conference platform for several days this last spring out in Bangladesh, where his ministry across the years has been so effective. And so this is a man that I've plied him with questions for three decades now, and he's been helpful to me. But as far as having a formal relationship with a mentor of any kind, I've never had that. I called on childhood pastors once I became a pastor to help me with some practical things, and for which I'm grateful. But I've become convinced that with all of the contribution that theological education, as it is currently being practiced today, can make, there's a limit to what you can learn in seminary to prepare you for life in the church. And I'm persuaded that a student can go to any of our seminaries and receive a wonderful theological education, can learn to parse your verbs and decline your nouns, and learn what happened to Chalcedon and why that's important, and you can learn about Zwingli and Luther and Wesley and Whitfield and Spurgeon, and you can learn all the things that you learn in seminary. You can learn about all the different eschatological views on what's going to happen in the future, and you can graduate at the top of your class. You can be valedictorian in your class, be called to your first church, and not have the foggiest idea about what to do next, other than to show up on Sunday and preach. But so many of our pastors go to seminary and graduate, and they go to their first church, and they've never been to a deacon's meeting. They've never sat down with a finance committee to develop a church budget for the next year. They don't know how to enlist Bible study leaders. They've never been a part of a vacation Bible school. They don't know what to do with deacons. And yet they're expected to be the leader. Now, I became convinced that these matters, these leadership skills and relationship skills and equipping skills, are best learned in the context of the local church. And you can read about these kinds of skills, and we should, and I do. But some things are best caught than taught. They're best observed in the context of experience, in the context of a local church. And so, I became pastor of Lakeview Baptist Church in Auburn in 1979, and the Lord began to move in our church, and the church began to grow. One of the things that happened early on is that God began to call out students, Auburn University students, to the gospel ministry. And in the fall of 1980, there were three or four in our church who had been called to the gospel ministry. And I said to those young men, I said, would you be interested in meeting with me for 1 hour a week, and we'll just talk about the practical matters of ministry, the kind of things that you're probably not going to pick up when you go to seminary when you finish here at Auburn University. And so we began to do that. We initially met in the afternoons, and there's so many conflicts in the afternoons, so we moved it on to Thursday morning at 6 a.m. Now, the only conflict at 6 a.m. in the morning for 99.9% of the people is the rack monster. That's just their unwillingness, the inability to get up and be there. And so, you know, you soon separate the men from the boys, and those who are serious from those who just want to kind of coast along. And so we started on Thursday mornings, and been doing it to this very day. I had 21 in my class last Thursday morning. These are primarily Auburn students who've been called to the gospel ministry. And so what we'll do is we'll take a topic or a theme. We call it the preaching class because the first thing that I taught was how to prepare sermons. And I just taught them the way I'd been taught at Southwestern Seminary. And we'll take a book, and we'll work through a book. And over the years, of course, there's a lot of repetition in this because the students come and go, and new generations of students come in. But I've taught preaching and evangelism and sermon delivery, and I've taught pastoral ministry and leadership and prayer and missions and church growth to these young men. Occasionally, I'll do something of a more academic nature. I'll do a little doctrinal study or an apologetic study, but primarily, we don't do that. It's the more practical things, and we have an hour set aside every Thursday morning, which I do this with these fellas, and I may spend the first 5 minutes of the hour, or I may spend the first 45 minutes of the hour talking about something that I assign reading for that week. If something happened in a deacon's meeting that I thought was significant, I will share that with them and interpret to them what happened and how we came to the decision or conclusion that we came to. If something happened with staff, or if there's something going on in the church, or something in the community, or something in the culture at large that I want to speak to them and I want to interpret to them, I'll take the first 5, 10, 15, or 20 minutes of most every week before we move into the assigned topic of which I'd asked them to read and which I was going to teach. And so that's been a very rewarding experience. Now, I had no idea it'd be so many. And in the setting that I'm in a university setting, I mean, you would expect that because you have all these thousands of students there, and you would expect that God would be calling some of these people to the gospel ministry. But wherever you are, if you have somebody in your church that's been called to preach, I would commend to you that you take them under your wing, and that you hook up with them in some way on a regular basis, I'd say at least once a week, and just begin to instruct them and let them just, you know, be with you and watch you in ministry and be mentored by you. Well, in 1987, I suggested to our personnel committee and to our deacons that since God was calling a number of people to the gospel ministry, that we could enhance their preparation for seminary if we would put some of these fellows on staff for a year. Because I had come to see how very valuable my 20 months as a pastor prior to going to seminary had been to me, showing me how little I knew and how much I need to pay attention in class. But also I was persuaded that the classical seminary route, with all of its value and all of its virtue, had some limits. And so the church agreed, and we began this internship ministry where we would take one or two of our best young men who graduated from Army University. We would put them on staff for 1 year prior to their enrolling in a seminary of their choosing. And we did that for a number of years. It was a good experience for us. Without exception, every one of those young men who have been through that one-year internship have expressed gratitude for what they learned. Some have gone so far as to say that the things I learned the year I was on staff at Lakeview were more valuable than anything else I've learned along the way. And so during the course of the year, we would try to expose them to every facet of the life of our church. And then I would have them on a reading program, and we would meet once a week and review the book they had read that week. And so that was going very well, and I was enjoying doing that. And in September of 1993, my wife Kim and I were in Colorado. We were in Crested Butte, Colorado, for a week. Every year we go on an anniversary trip. And we weren't married in September; we were married in October. But you know how it is in church life; you can't always hit the right date. So we've done our anniversary trip on the right date, sometimes in September, sometimes in November, but sometimes in the fall, we'll go off for a week or so. And I'm an early riser, and she's not. And I was up early one day, and I really wasn't looking for this. I just spending time with the Lord, and it just, as I was waiting on the Lord said to me, I want you to take the internship ministry that you've started, and I want you to expand it from one or two interns at a time up to a maximum of 12 at a time. I want you to expand it from 1 year to 3 years. I want you to partner with one of our seminaries so that over a course of 3 years, you'll take these interns and they'll be mentored by you and by the church staff. He will expose them to every ministry in the church at a fairly intense, in-depth level, and then you will partner with a school so that they'll receive a classical theological education, theology, Greek, Hebrew, Old and New Testament, church history, ethics, philosophy, and in 3 years they'll graduate. Well, I didn't do anything for a while. That's a pretty tall order. And after several months, I approached Timothy George, a longtime friend, who, as you know, is dean of the Beeson Divinity School in Birmingham. And I approached Timothy because Birmingham is close. It'd be easy for professors to come from Birmingham to Auburn, which is about a two-hour drive. And Timothy's response was positive. He said, "I think it's a wonderful idea. But he said, it's just not for us. Our school is too new, and we're just not ready for this." But he encouraged me to pursue it. And so next, I approached Al Mohler at Southern Seminary. Dr. Mohler has been a friend since he was editor of the Christian Index in Georgia. And I called him. I said, "I need to chat with you sometime about an idea." And so we met at the Southern Baptist Convention in Orlando in the summer of 94. And he listened with interest, and his initial response was, "This is something that we don't want to do." Well, I was disappointed, and so I didn't do anything for a while. At the time, David Dockery was the dean of the School of Theology, and he was the vice president for academics at Southern, and David and I had been friends from when he was at the Sunday School Board as an editor, and Tom Rayner had just gone to Southern to be dean of the Billy Graham School, and I knew Tom from when he was a pastor in Alabama, and Bob Hughes was the director of extension studies at Southern Seminary at the time, and I'd known Bob for since I'd been a groomsman in his wedding back in the 1973. So David and Bob and Tom were the three key administrators who would make it work, but Dr. Muller had to approve it. And so I was on campus in Louisville. I don't know if I was chapel or doing a conference or something there, but anyway, I was there to speak. So David Dockery and Tom Rayner and Bob Hughes and I took Dr. Muller out for supper one night, and we made the best case we could make to try this experimental relationship where we train future pastors with a classical theological education in the context of a local church. And it was an interesting evening, and at the end of the evening, Dr. Muller said, "If you'll give me something in writing, I will consider it." So David Dockery took my ideas and wrote a paper which he presented to Al Muller, and Dr. Muller agreed. And so we were in business. And we began to try to prepare to do this, to bring the students together and to determine how we're going to work this out. Well, in the spring of 96, we actually formalized the partnership and began to interview prospective students, all of whom came out of our church. There were nine in the first group, nine seminary interns. And one Sunday morning, I was in my study trying to think through what I was going to preach on that day and get ready to preach, and I really was having trouble doing that. Because I was just thinking about this partnership, and I thought, you know, we're about to enter into this 3-year venture with Southern Seminary to train these young pastors, and we've not sat down. I've not thought through exactly what it is we want them to look like when we finish, and so I sat down. When I should have been working on my sermon, I just started writing quickly. It was coming to me very quickly. And I put together this profile of a Lakeview Baptist Church, Southern Baptist Theological Seminary trained pastor of 19 competencies. Let's hold those, Valerie. I see you going back there, but I'm looking at the watch, and I know. Tell me, Charles. When do you want me to stop? 10? Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and do that. Let's pass those out at this time, okay? I wrote them down quickly. Of course, they've been refined since I just jotted them down. But these are the objectives that we want to see in place in the lives of these young men when they come to graduation at the end of 3 years on our church staff. And I want to just leave you a copy of this because there's no reason why this partnership that we've done couldn't be reproduced in some other churches, and maybe yours is one of those that could do it. Now, I'm sure there are things you could add to this, and things you might want to take out of this, but this is what we developed. When these fellows come to graduation, we want them to be, number one, spiritually alive and growing. And you'll notice the very first sentence says, the graduate must give evidence of being genuinely converted. We try to discern that on the front end, by the way, not the tail end. And it just must be a person that walks with God. That has an intimate relationship with God. Number two, a balanced and disciplined lifestyle of integrity, and who has his relationships in proper order, spiritual, family, and vocational relationships. Number three, we want the graduate to be biblically knowledgeable, to have a thorough grasp of Old and New Testament, to be able to place people, events, and themes of biblical history, to have a competent knowledge of the biblical languages. We're not looking to be language scholars. You need to go on campus to do that. Our guys take 2 semesters of Greek and 1 semester of Hebrew. And if they want to do more, they can do another degree on campus, a THM. Number four, to be theologically grounded, to have a good grasp of systematic, historical, and biblical theology, to be able to articulate theological beliefs. The great bane of the church today is there's so little theological depth. Number five, to be historically informed about church history and Baptist history and Southern Baptist Convention history. Number six, to be competent to lead worship, to plan worship and to lead worship. Number seven, to be homiletically prepared, that is to be able to interpret the Word of God, to be able to illustrate it, explain it, apply it, to preach sermons that are biblical and Christ-centered, that are clear and understandable, to preach with passion, authority, and clarity, to have good study habits, and to instill that in them. Number eight, to be evangelistically active, to be a soul winner. That's just foundational. And to have a heart for lost people. Number nine, to be missions-minded, to have a passion for the nations, and to be a mission mobilizer. Number 10, to be competent to lead, to have leadership skills, to move the church forward. Number 11, to be people-oriented, to have a genuine love for people, to see them grow in the grace of God. Number 12, to be administratively competent, to be able to manage staff and all the things that go with that. Number 13, next page, to be able to equip others for ministry, to understand spiritual gifts, to be able to discover, deploy, and develop spiritual gifts in ministry. Number 14, Christian education, to be familiar with sound principles of Christian education. In our case, it's Sunday school primarily. Number 15, congregational care. You see the things there. Number 16, a stewardship motivator, to be able to challenge people to be faithful stewards of their material possessions. And he must be a practicing tither. Number 17, we want them to graduate with a desire to have a lifelong love for learning. We think our graduates ought to have at least 300 books in their library when they graduate. That's just the starting point. That's not where you stop. Number 18, denominationally knowledgeable. We want our graduates to know about the work of the denomination. Part of their training is that they attend a Southern Baptist Convention once during their 3 years on staff. And number 19, to be culturally aware. So that'll give you kind of an overview of what we desire these guys to finish with. Well, think with me about this for just a minute. If you want to train to be a pilot, I'm not a pilot, have no desire to be, but I'm told if you want to train to be a pilot, you read, you go to classes, and somewhere along the way, you get in the cockpit with a trainer, and the two of you fly together. You don't go directly from the classroom, and they say, by the way, there's your plane out there. Now, you've read the books, and you've heard the lectures, and you know, you've listened to the professor, you've asked the question, now, you know, just go fly. You can be a pilot, and you go up, I don't know how many times since you go up with a trainer before you solo. If you're going to be a physician, you go to med school. But you don't just go to med school and listen to lectures and see all the slides on the screen of all these kind of whatever. And then you graduate one day and you just, you know, they put you in surgery and say go to it. You spend years in a teaching hospital making rounds with your professors. Now, that'll tell something right there. If we train our pilots in the classroom and on the job, and we train our physicians in the classroom and on the job, why don't we train our pastors just in the classroom? The classroom element is absolutely necessary, but it's not enough. And so we take our students, and we take them right out of the seminary classroom and put them right in the churches and say, basically, good luck. Hope you make it. And some of them don't. And it's sad. And I think the reason is that we've moved away from the concept of mentoring. Now, what we're doing with just a handful of students is just a small drop in the bucket. But it's a start. And it can be reproduced. And so what we have chosen to do is to take a group of interns. With the first cohort group, we had 9. They all graduated. The second group, we had 6, and they all graduated on time. With this third group, we're in our third year with the third group, we have 6. And they make a 3-year commitment to us, and we make a 3-year commitment to them. They have to be accepted on our staff. They have to be interviewed by the personnel committee and the pastor, and to be approved by our church. They also have to be accepted as a Master of Divinity student in the Graham School at Southern Seminary. So there's dual approvals that need to take place. And so we begin in July of this 3-year time frame. And they'll do a J-term course on campus. They'll do 3 other J-term courses in January. And most everything else is in Auburn or on the mission field. And so what we do is they take a classical, theological, they take the basic Master of Divinity curriculum, just like in the catalog in the ground school, but they take it in Auburn, and professors come to us. Professors will fly into Birmingham or to Montgomery or to Atlanta. Our students will pick them up at the airport and drive them to Auburn. That's very valuable time. They get to interact one-on-one with their professor for an hour or 2 hours, depending on which airport they're taking them to. Now, wouldn't you like to have had that kind of one-on-one time with a professor when you were in seminary? Yeah. And you know, I had seminaries at Southwestern's where we never had a class above 99. That was a rule. But I had some that had 99 in it. And this is a class of 6 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 12, never more than 20. So they interact with professors. We get professors from 4 sources. Number one, most of our instructors come from Southern. And in the providence of God, we've had outstanding senior faculty members. We had Bruce Ware to teach our guys theology. We had Tom Nettles to come several times to teach across the years church history. We had Tom Rayner for church growth and Tim Booker for evangelism and others I could name. Not junior faculty members. I've been amazed that senior faculty would be willing to make the trip down to teach our men. The second source of instruction comes from retired faculty. Cal Guy has taught every group missions and church planting. Larry Walker was my Hebrew prof in seminary. He's come for all 3 groups to teach Hebrew. These are 2 retired professors. A third source of professors come from pastors in our area who have the academic credentials to teach. And we've been fortunate to have a few nearby that can teach things, New Testament and Greek and courses like that. And then I teach 1 class every semester. There are 6 classes that I teach, and I teach them in this sequence. I teach the first semester. I teach every Wednesday afternoon from 1:30 to 4:30. Unless I'm traveling, and I teach semester 1, spiritual formation, semester 2, sermon prep, semester 3, sermon delivery, semester 4, church dynamics, semester 5, life and work of the pastor, and the last semester, leadership. And so they get the theological training in this way, and the class schedule is such that we have classes when professors can come. They may come in and teach on a Monday night, 3 hours and 4 hours on Tuesday morning. Or they may come in and teach all day Friday. And so every semester has a different kind of classroom schedule. Now, around that theological training, we integrate them into the life of our church. They attend all staff meetings, with few exceptions, all deacons meetings. They see the inner workings of our church up close. And we rotate them over the course of 3 years with all of our equipping level pastors and directors. For instance, this fall semester, and I don't know this to be the case, but it could be the case. This fall semester, one of our interns might be working with Joanne Moore, our preschool director, and And she will spend the semester telling this intern about preschool ministry, how they recruit preschool workers, about the preschool security code. One of the things I specifically ask her to do is to make sure they have the experience on a Sunday to change a messy diaper and to learn what it's like. We put them back there in the nursery, and you know, sometimes services runs long, and they get to experience that. And so that's good preparation for being a pastor someday. At the same time, someone else might be in the music, working with our minister of music, and they go to choir rehearsal, they go to orchestra and observe orchestra rehearsal. They sing on Sunday during the semester. They're in the choir. They're actually in rehearsal and in the service on Sunday. They have reading assignments. Now, none of this is for credit. This is just for learning. You know, it was Charles Chaney that said, and I thought he had a lot of wisdom. I heard Chaney say years ago, he said, we ought to give all the first semester seminary students their diploma the first week of their seminary experience. And then let those who want to learn stay. Well, that's pretty good. So some are going for the degree to hang on the wall, and some are going to learn. Well, so they're just doing this to learn. Another intern might be working with our administrator, and he'll see how the budgets, you know, they'll go through the whole budget process, which is a process that takes several months of putting all that together, and they see that up close, and that's not something I want to do, but we want them to have the experience of seeing how it's done. Someone might be with our college pastor and be involved in college ministry, someone with our children's director and see how children's ministry functions and operates. So we expose them with all of our equipping level staff so that they get to experience that. Now, in addition to that, they spend two summers. The summer between the first and second year, they spend stateside working with North American Mission Board planting churches. The first group was in Erie, Pennsylvania, and the second group we sent to Maryland, and this last group spent the summer in Las Vegas. And between the second and third year, our students are overseas. The first group was in Costa Rica, the second group was in Ghana, and that can be a challenge. One of our guys contracted malaria. That was not a pleasant experience. And then the third group was in several East African countries. We had some in Sudan. We actually had one in southern Sudan. They lived in a tent for 7 weeks. We had two in Nairobi, two single guys in Nairobi. Had a husband and wife in Kampala, and a husband and wife in Mombasa, Kenya, and we had a husband and wife off the coast of Tanzania in a Muslim culture. And so we want them to be exposed to what God is doing internationally as well as in the United States. So much so that when they come to graduation, they have a sense of being prepared to for what they're going to encounter in a way that perhaps they would not otherwise.